Ready? Perfect. Okay. We have the appellant appearing by Zoom for this one. State versus Murillo Godoy. State versus Murillo Godoy. Mr. Coffey, I just want to make sure you can hear us.
I can hear you, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Brian Copley. I'm appearing today on behalf of the appellant Alexis Murillo Godoy. I want to first thank the court for allowing me to appear by Zoom to make these arguments. As the court's aware, I have set forth, or apparently attempted to set forth, three assignments of error pertaining to my case. I want to first start with the first assignment of error, which is that there was not articulable reasonable suspicion to detain Mr. Godoy beyond the purposes of the traffic stop. As the court's aware, the district court had set out a variety of factors as to why Mr. Godoy could be detained. It's our position that even if those factors are considered, you know, separately or together, that the combination of those factors does not amount to reasonable suspicion, even under a totality of the circumstances analysis. Most of the factors. Yes, Your Honor.
Before you get started in too deep into your argument, I just want to make sure I understand what you are and are not appealing. As I read your brief, the reasonable suspicion issue and not the duration of the detention. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so the Trooper Goodschmidt talked about the fact that he had an expired driver's license and expired passport and was traveling across the country instead of flying. An innocent explanation was provided on the scene for that. And the trooper substantiated that his license was in fact expired. The trooper talked about the fact that he had a salvage title, that his origin of travel was from Long Beach, California, and that he had taken an indirect route. But we think those three factors don't amount to much. And in fact, are, you know, there were innocent explanations for those items, or they capture such a broad populace that they don't really give much weight to the reasonable suspicion argument. In particular, the fact that he came from Long Beach, California, or the fact that there was a salvage title. Obviously, a lot of innocent people have salvage titles. A lot of innocent people are traveling from California. The fact that he didn't travel through Texas and the southern states on his way to Georgia as well should not be given much weight, in our opinion. I don't believe that was asked directly of Mr. Godoy on the scene as to why he was doing that. But the reality is that you know, there's innocent reasons why someone may do that, to go see family. Or, you know, Hispanics may travel in the northern states seeking to avoid traveling closer to the border in Texas. The other issues. Yes, Your Honor.
Weren't there a couple of other factors that Judge Doyle mentioned? The nervousness. Again, I realize that alone is not sufficient. And then also the defendant's action in wanting to show him his suitcase that it only contained clothing. And as I recall the trooper's testimony, he went into pretty great detail on the salvage title issue as to an indicator. And so there's I don't know, six or seven factors, I don't have them counted exactly, that the court considered in the totality of the circumstances.
Yeah. Sorry, Your Honor, to cut you off. I
understand the question, but you may respond.
Yeah. And, you know, so he had one suitcase, and then he had opened that suitcase to show the trooper. Apparently the trooper's explanation for that was maybe showing him that he didn't have anything, and so it was suspicious. And yeah, he did go into detail about the salvage title. I mean, I think one thing, you have to view this through the prism of, we have someone who's not speaking English. There's a language and cultural barrier here. And so you're asking, the trooper's making these interpretations within that light. And so it's our position that we have to be extra cautious about what we consider to be suspicious from someone who really doesn't necessarily perhaps understand what's going on in the context of the traffic stop. So, that's why I think, you know, there's other factors such as if he had criminal drug history, or there was another passenger who gave inconsistent travel plans. Like, I think there's factors that are deserving of greater weight. But the factors that Judge Doyle pointed to and Trooper Goodschmidt did, I believe, have minimal weight. On the salvage title issue, a lot of that goes back to what he called his training and experience and what they've been taught about interdiction. And I think, that's kind of a slippery slope. I mean, I think we have to gauge when the trooper says that, under what he's saying. So if he says, under my training, Long Beach has, you know, is a place where narcotics are often trafficked from. Like, does that really have a ton of weight as opposed to something that may be more specialized? And I think the salvage title is kind of falls into the category of something that is probably not deserving of much weight just because of its prevalence within our society. But I'm going to move on, if I could, Your Honors, to the second assignment of error. We're arguing here that the search should have been suppressed because it was based on a Miranda violation. We'll admit that following the end of the traffic stop, the trooper did ask him to, you know, answer some questions. It transitions at that point to a first tier encounter, right? And he's voluntarily asking some questions.
Is that necessarily the case that it transitions when Mr. Murillo Godoy agreed to continue talking to him?
Yeah, and I think he's having, at that point, he's having a consensual discussion with the state trooper. So I call that a first tier encounter. I guess maybe I have that wrong, but where he's just talking with the officer. And then he does not consent to a search. And at that point, the trooper is sent, you know, he says he's not free to go, that he's being detained for the suspicion, right? And it's our argument that that time period between when he was told he's not free to go and when he subsequently makes a statement that he has marijuana in the vehicle, it's that time period where we have to look at whether he was in custody and whether he was interrogated, right? And so I understand that there's case law in Nebraska that talks about whether a person's considered in custody for purposes of Miranda when they are being temporarily detained. It's our argument that, you know, the cases of, I think it's State v. Khalil and State v. Landis that talk about this. It's our argument that those cases are distinctive from what we have here. Both those cases involve something that was pretty brief and pretty temporary. And in fact, in State v. Landis, I think the defendant was told he was free to leave. And so the question is whether there's a restriction on one's freedom as to render them in custody. In this instance, Mr. Godoy was told he is not free to leave. He was seated in a police vehicle next to the state trooper.
And so where we need the reasonable suspicion to continue right. Detention. It's a tier two, right?
Yeah, it's a tier two. And what we're asking the court to go beyond that and say, for the purposes of Miranda, though, he is considered in custody because of his detention and because of the fact he's not free to go and because of the length of it. It's not a brief temporary detention. He's essentially at that point when the statements are made, he's being held for 40 minutes by the trooper.
During that time, does the trooper ask him any questions? He's on his cell phone texting presumably, and there's no real questioning going on during that period of time, is there?
Well, yeah, so that's the second part. Was he interrogated, right? You know, our argument is that the case law is, you know, State v. Lamb, State v. Connolly talk about the fact that the trooper can engage in some course of inquiry. What happened here is that I think, you know, there was 20 minutes of silence essentially, and then he asks why he's detained. Trooper says because of the drug dog is coming. And then he says, it's hard to make out. Well, the car actually in front of marijuana for own consumption. You can't really watch the video. You really can't make it out. This is when Trooper Gutschmidt says, do you have marijuana in your car for personal consumption? And so I think case law says, you know, Connolly talks about, you know, they're allowed to clarify this. In State v. Land, the defendant said, how would you like it? And the sheriff said, what do you mean by that? Well, and it's our position this is distinctive because he's not saying, what did you just say? He's not saying, can you explain more? He is asking a very direct question that is intended to, in our opinion, elicit an incriminating response. Do you have marijuana in the vehicle? And if he answers yes, a search is going to happen, which is exactly what happened. And that's the basis for the search is the probable cause as a result of that.
Let's admission. Assume that the trooper didn't ask that follow-up question, or we find that was inappropriate without Miranda. The fact that the defendant had already said marijuana, I believe twice before there was any clarification, mentioned marijuana in the car, personal use, before the clarifying question, isn't that sufficient then to give probable cause to search?
It, you know, it'll be our position, it's not. You know, I think that the video I sent to you guys, I should have probably made a copy of. I didn't know I'd be here in oral argument, so I didn't have a chance to listen to it again. But the term marijuana does come out of his mouth. But I don't think he specifically says the car, you know, the car actually in front of marijuana for own consumption. It's really garbled. And so I don't think that's not a voluntary admission that would warrant probable cause to search the vehicle. There needs to be something more before you use probable cause to search that vehicle. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day that that there was a custodial interrogation, and as a result, the search should be excluded and the evidence that came from it. The last thing is my last assignment of error. And I, you know, I made a mistake here. I should have put more detail. I put he was ineffective and I didn't put the reason. I have it in the headline of my summary of argument. The plain truth is that I just made a mistake. And so I asked the court, you know, you don't have to scour my brief. It's the headline of my argument. It's the summary of the argument, asking the court to still consider that assignment of error for the purposes of this appeal.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Osborne?
Good morning.
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 May it please the court, Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the state of Nebraska. The state submits that the appellant's motion to suppress was properly denied. The initial stop was lawful for an inoperable headlight. Appellant's not contesting that. He also is not contesting the initial investigative stop up to the point that the warning was issued. And that took about 20 minutes to get to that point in the stop. The state submits that after the warning was issued, there was a tier one consensual counter, as I understand it. He's not contesting that either. In any event, though, by the time that the warning was issued, the trooper did have reasonable articulable suspicion to extend the stop. Reasonable suspicion is a low bar. It's lower than the amount of suspicion required for probable cause. The officer just needs a minimal level of objective justification to suspect wrongdoing under the totality of the circumstances. I do want to focus just for a moment on this concept of the totality of the circumstances. The U.S. Supreme Court and Nebraska appellate courts have held that the facts supporting reasonable suspicion or probable cause are considered collectively, meaning that they're taken together as a whole. Viewing each of these factors in isolation rather than as part of the totality of the circumstances is improper. A divide and conquer analysis is precluded by the totality of the circumstances test. So it's also improper to just outright dismiss certain circumstances that are susceptible to innocent explanations. Those factors that may independently be inconsistent with innocent activities or be consistent with innocent activities may nonetheless amount to reasonable suspicion when considered collectively. In addition, officers are allowed to draw on their own experience, their specialized training, to make inferences and deductions about those factors that might well elude an untrained person. So we're not talking about certainties here, we're talking about probabilities. So here the district court made several factual findings that were not clearly erroneous about the factors that raised the trooper's reasonable suspicions of wrongdoing before the warning was issued. The first series of factors pertains to the travel plans. Nebraska appellate courts have said that when travel plans seem unusual and they're not reasonably explained, that can give rise to reasonable suspicion.
Are we really arguing about what happened up until the warning? Isn't it from the warning on that?
Well, what happened?
Focusing on
right, what happened prior to the warning being issued? That's the basis of the reasonable suspicion. Right. So it is suspicious, and I would submit that it's totally illogical for someone to drive hundreds of miles off course when they don't have a driver's license. He shouldn't be driving to begin with. He is not driving for pleasure. This isn't a vacation. He's not on some sightseeing tour through Nebraska.
Did he ever give an explanation for why they were driving through Nebraska?
He never provided a reasonable explanation for why he was in Nebraska whatsoever. He's driving from Long Beach, California to Atlanta, Georgia to move permanently across the country.
With one suitcase,
which is another suspicious circumstance. The fact that it just common sense would indicate that it seems unusual for somebody to permanently move across the country And after having lived in California for 6 years, have accumulated only one suitcase of clothing, and that's all that they desire to keep permanently moving across country. That's suspicious. It's at least unusual. And combined with the suspicious travel plans, why is he in Nebraska? There's a direct route through I-40 through Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. He could have driven straight to Georgia that way.
But that wasn't asked of him by the trooper, was it?
He wasn't asked why he was in Nebraska. He did not provide an explanation for why he was in Nebraska. The explanation that he gave was that he was moving permanently to Atlanta, Georgia, and he's coming from Long Beach, California. There's really no reason for him to be taking a route through Nebraska. It's several hundred extra miles. It's several hours.
The trooper didn't ask him why he was out of the normal direct route.
Correct. He didn't ask him that. It's still a suspicious set of travel plans. And then you combine that with an additional factor that he's coming from. There are certain areas of the country that serve as sources for significant quantities of narcotics. He's coming from Long Beach, California. The officer testified in his training experience as a drug interdiction officer that is a source city for narcotics. And this court has stated that travel originating from a location known for drug activity can contribute to reasonable suspicion. Then we have the salvage study.
Get too close to the end of your time.
Sure.
Assuming reasonable suspicion, can we move to the Miranda argument on whether he was in custody once he was being told that he was being detained to await for the canine?
Yes. One thing I would just mention, I don't know that this was actually raised before the district court. It's not in the district court's order. There isn't discussion about custodial interrogation. That's because it wasn't raised in the motion and it wasn't argued by the trial counsel during the suppression hearing. So I don't know that issue was actually even raised before the trial court. But even if it was, there's no custodial interrogation. The U.S. Supreme Court, the Nebraska Supreme Court, and this court have all said that persons temporarily detained pursuant to an investigatory stop are not in custody for purposes of Miranda. That's exactly what we have here. He's being detained for an investigative stop to have a drug canine come to the scene and do a sniff of the vehicle.
So you agree at that point he was not free to leave?
Well, he's being detained temporarily to wait for the drug dog to do a sniff of the vehicle. The fact that he's being detained, that's a tier two, it's a Terry stop. That is not in custody for purposes of Miranda. The defendant's presence in the officer's vehicle doesn't bring the level of interaction here to the extent analogous with an arrest, when there's no indication that the trooper used force or threats to get the defendant to enter the cruiser or remain there. He asked the appellant to come back with him to the vehicle as part of the original traffic stop. And part of the reason for that was so that they could communicate using the phone, the translator app on the phone.
So when he was handed the warning ticket, was he free to leave at that point?
At the time that he was handed the warning ticket, the stop was over. He was free to go. The officer asked, can I talk to you some more? And he said, he consented. He said, yeah, I'll talk to you, which is what opposing counsel was mentioning in his argument. There also wasn't interrogation, as was mentioned earlier.
Do you think at the point where the trooper asked the clarifying question, do you have marijuana in the car for personal use? Do you think that triggered Miranda?
Ask
that direct question.
Yeah, for two reasons. One, he's not in custody, so there's no Miranda requirement. Second, it's not interrogation for him to just try to clarify. As opposing counsel had said, the appellant had made a comment essentially indicating that the car has marijuana for own consumption. Appellant's counsel indicated that was somewhat garbled a little bit on the translator app, and he's just asking to clarify, is this what you just said? You just said that there was marijuana in the vehicle.
So is that your position where probable cause jumped in then to search, is when the defendant mentioned the marijuana?
Yes.
The drug dog wasn't actually used,
no,
was it?
Yeah. The drug dog was never actually used.
Yeah.
Because the appellant admitted that there was marijuana in his vehicle, and then they looked through the windshield from the outside of the vehicle and they saw the marijuana in plain view, that established probable cause to search the vehicle. So,
but that clarifying question, isn't that intended to elicit an incriminating response?
He's already made an incriminating response. It's intended to understand, is that what you just said? He had already said there's marijuana for own consumption in the vehicle. He's just clarifying to try to make sure that that's what you said, right? And yeah, that's exactly what he said. So it's not, the officer didn't initiate the questioning. He's responding to a statement and comment made voluntarily by the appellant.
Does the length of the wait for the canine play any role in determining? I mean, Khalil is, I think it was like 3 minutes. Before the canine came. This is different. This is longer. And he asks a couple of times if he can leave. And he's been told by the officer that he's being detained.
Right. I don't think that the fact that that he's essentially he's detained about 20 minutes for the canine to get there. I think if I can.
Yes, please.
I'm almost out of time here. We're in a rural area in Nebraska. This is in the area of Lexington. It's after 11 p.m. at night. He has to call another canine officer to come to the scene, who's responding from another location within that county. So they're waiting approximately about 20 minutes from the time that he detains him to when the drug dog arrives. And it's actually less than that. It's actually, I think it's about 18 minutes from the time that he's detained to when he says there's marijuana in the vehicle. So yes, it's a bit longer than in some other cases, but I don't think that that changes the Miranda calculus. This is a tier two, it's a Terry stop. We're waiting for the drug dog to arrive. And that doesn't make it equivalent to an arrest at that point. There's no custody and there's no interrogation.
Anything else?
Thank you. Nope.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
How long did we take Ms. Osborne over?
1 minute.
Mr. Copley, would you like a minute and 23 seconds to respond? Oh, you're muted.
Yeah. Yes, I would, Your Honor. Thank you. Sorry about that.
You may proceed.
Okay. Well, first I want to address whether this was brought up at the initial motion to suppress. I would argue it was. The motion to suppress filed actually asserted the Fifth Amendment. I think Judge Doyle's order specifically lays out that he just felt that the continuation of Mr. Godoy in the vehicle was consensual. And so I would agree it wasn't adequately addressed by Judge Doyle, but it was filed as part of the motion to suppress. And so I think it's properly before the court for consideration. The second thing I want to point to is that the custody, custodial interrogation. You know, the question I think you asked was, does the length of time matter? And I think it does. I mean, you look at someone who's, again, I said this probably in my first argument, but he's in the car for 40 minutes. I know part of that was part of the investigative stop. I understand that. But at this point, we have someone who's unfamiliar with this, with our country, with our culture, with anything, who's been in the car for 20 minutes, state trooper telling him he can't go. And instead of the state trooper asking him, what did you just say? Or asking him some open-ended question, which would allow him to maybe just speak his mind, he asked something that, as a reasonable and disinterested person, could conclude that that conduct would likely elicit an incriminating response. That's the holding in State v. Connolly. I mean, Trooper Goodschmidt knew that when he asked that question, if he said yes, that his whole case was dumped on the search. And so I think that the way that the question was phrased, the length of time, the fact he was in that cop car and who he is, what makes it distinctive from the other cases, Your Honor. Start.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Case is submitted and counsel is excused.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.